KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. We're on Twitter at KUOW. And we were just talking about being in yet another summer of wildfires. Redding, California, of course, more than 175 square miles of burned. And near Yakima, kids attending summer camps have been told to leave immediately because of a fire there. You just heard from that environment journalist, Richard Manning, clearly talking about fire suppression, but mostly talking about climate change. And that's certainly what Governor Inslee went to last year when he was talking about the burning American West.
We're seeing our climate change. Climate change is ravaging our forests. The combination of beetle kill and drought and higher temperatures has made our fires, frankly, just bombs waiting to go off.
From wildfires to sea level rise to disrupted ecosystems, how will climate change change us into the future? Well, my next guest is a futurist, a science fiction writer, and by the way, the chief information officer for the city of Kirkland, Brenda Cooper. Welcome back.
Thank you.
You're writing about our future in your book series, Project Earth. Your new book is just out. What does the future Northwest look like in your series?
Well, basically, at least in the books, I have two very specific ecosystems. One of them is in the city of Seacouver. Seacouver is a city that stretches from Tacoma up through Vancouver. It is connected, automated, dense. It's sort of ever-changing. It's very prosperous. There's lots and lots of people there. It's super dynamic.
Wait a minute. Seattle and Vancouver are one city. Does that mean the U.S. and Canada are no longer?
It means that cities have gotten so much power that they're able to actually be more important than national governments, at least the megacities.
And what roughly what year are we talking?
We're talking about 50 years into the future.
Okay. And why is that important that cities are so powerful?
Well, you mentioned I work for a city. I'm really interested in smart cities and in the importance of cities. And if I look at our current political environment and I look at how important cities like San Francisco, Seattle, New York are on the political environment, that we are making a lot of the forward progress on climate change, that we are making a lot of the changes. The states are also contributing really well to these things. And so I think that there are things that cities and states are going to be able to do that the federal government really is unable to do for a variety of reasons that probably are beyond the scope of this program.
Yes. Okay, so there you have megacities bubbled in, and meanwhile, the wilderness around.
And that plays so well into what you were just talking about. In Wilders and Keepers, the area in between the megacities has essentially been legally stripped of public ownership rights in most places. There are a few places that are allowed to survive as small cities, say Clay Ellum, but most of the areas people have actually said, hey, you need to not have people living here for a couple of reasons. One of them is this is sort of a deeper into climate change than we are now, and hopefully even beginning to get a little bit better at it future.
And what's the world looking like in that?
And the world, well, it's been through exactly the fires that Richard Manning was talking about. So a lot of this land is burned. It's being restructured, re-put together. There are wilders out there on the land working to help rebuild wild populations. Existing forests that didn't burn or areas that didn't burn are being pretty heavily protected, both by robotics and by people. And then, of course, there are illegal people out there on that land that really wish the world was the way it used to be. So that produces a little bit of the tension in the novel series.
Why haven't those people learned the lesson you want us to learn from climate change?
Why do we have climate change deniers today? I mean, I just think there are people who just don't want to admit these things because they're inconvenient.
This is fiction, Brenda, but you call this a plausible future. That's kind of the zone you operate in. So how could your future world flow from what we are doing now? What's some examples?
One thing is I have high-speed transportation all up and down the West Coast, and we're using Hyperloops, which Elon Musk has been talking about. And I understood there's a number of other people that are talking about how do we get high-speed transportation among our economic centers here. There are a lot of trends and movements of people into cities where cities are growing at a fairly fast rate, both in becoming more dense and becoming larger. And I've extrapolated this, I think, with climate change. More and more people are going to want to be in here. You're far less likely in Bellevue to be overcome by a wildfire, for example, than you are in Chelan. I think that cities provide safety, economic security, lots of opportunities for people. And I've been following Forterra's work, and what they do is to work to protect land and to also densify and make better cities. And I think that that's an interesting thing that we're going to need to begin doing.
Brenda Cooper's new book, Keepers, is book two in her Project Earth series. And you can tell listening to her, this is not just apocalyptic. You're painting a future that, like today, has good ideas and good intentions and old arguments and, right? You know, what's the core of that?
The future is going to be at least as complex as the present. It might even be more complex than the present. And so I don't like particularly to read or to write books or stories that really take one position, because I really think the world is far more complex than that. And as a futurist, I really like to explore the various things that might happen. And we're going to have people with multiple religions, multiple belief systems, multiple political beliefs, multiple hopes and dreams. And they're all going to be competing, hopefully well and happily together to make a better world. And I think it's going to be complex.
And as it plays out in the lives of the sisters who you're following in your book, What is that main argument about? Let's boil it down to a couple different worldviews. What are we fighting over?
One of the things we're fighting over is some of the people who are with the sister who is out in the wildlands. Is she lands with some people who really, really want to have more legal rights around land and small farm ownership and things like that than they're able to have. And so they're saying, hey, we really don't want things to be the way that they are. And this conflicts the sister who's out there working with them, because it's not her job to help them break the laws, but instead it's her job to help enforce the laws that are there in her position as a wilder. The sister who is back in the city, her primary conflicts really are in a place that big and that diverse. How do you decide what you want to be and what you want to become, and how do you become helpful and useful? And then she's also, of course, trying to support her sister who is out in the wild.
And cities are in domes?
Seacouver is in a weather dome, so it's not domed as hard as, say, Stephen King's Dome book. It's not something you could walk up and hit. But there's a need to keep significant storm events and things away from the city. So there are fields and energies and things that are designed to help keep that from happening.
There is a lot of hope in your stories. Where do you find hope? Because we've spent many minutes talking about a grieving orca who's dealing with, you know, loss of her food and pollution and the noise of boats. And then we're talking about the West burning and climate change. And you're finding hope where, Brenda?
I share the worry about all of those things. I've been following the orca. This was a great show to listen to. But I believe in humanity. I believe that I constantly meet other people who want to make the world a better place. I meet far more people who want to contribute, who want to help, who want their families to be healthy and happy. And I believe that we're capable of doing the growing up that we need to do as a society if we're going to be able to survive the next 50 years.
How are we going to agree on what growing up is and what doing the right thing is?
You don't have to completely agree. I mean, if I even talk to people who are within my circles, which I'm going to admit are a little bit more liberal, they don't all agree. But there's a tendency to want to be clean, be neat, be honest, you know, be decent. I really think that people don't have to agree completely on what's good. What you have to agree, I think, is on what you don't want. For example, I think we're going to have to agree that we don't want a future that is soaked in oil and gas. Okay,
but yeah, fossil fuels are a thing of the past by now in your book, right?
Oh,
50
yeah.
years from now.
Yeah. In fact, I've assumed a future where they don't really have to worry that much about power because solar power is practically infinite. So I actually don't even deal very much with, hey, we have to recharge this or what are we going to run the vehicle on? Because what are we going to run our robotics on? There's a lot of robotics in these books because I really think we're going to have figured that out by then. And so I think there's a lot of positive technologies. This is another place that I find hope. When I talk to young entrepreneurs, I talk to people starting companies, I talk to millennials, a lot of them have a lot of really great ideas and they're trying to bring technology to bear on making changes and creating better things by finding things we may want to do that are related to or may use new technology. We're also seeing social changes. I'm in a world where, yeah, we have two cars, but most of my millennial friends, they have zero. You know, so we're already beginning to see, I think, a lot of the changes that need to be made. Uber and Lyft and self-driving cars, a lot of these things are going to help us a lot with some of the issues that we really are struggling with as a society.
Who has the power in this 50 years on world and who doesn't have the power? We haven't done away with oppression and tribalism and injustice, I assume. So who do you imagine having the power and not?
Cities are still democratic. And the people who run the cities have a lot of the power. There is still a federal government, but it has less power than the megacities. The megacities have also created sort of a coalition so that they work on things that they may need to work on together, similar to the way that the major cities all up and down the West Coast have political coalitions where they work on some things in many similar ways. There are poor. In this world, we do have basic income. So people are not homeless and starving. You know, the basic level, the lowest level of basic income basically just meets the lower Maslow's hierarchy needs. And people are still required to work because I made the decision that probably basic income with no give back from people was not a good idea. So what I have them doing is perhaps working in the gardens in the city, picking up trash, doing a variety of other things in trade for their living to whatever they're capable of doing. You know, a lot of these are details that maybe even don't show up in the book, but they show up in my notes so that I could make the book right.
Yeah, what do they call that? The book? The deep story or whatever, right? The whole world that you've created.
Right. You do a lot more world building than you're able to get into the story.
World building, yeah. By the way, again, this is Brenda Cooper, a science fiction writer, and her latest book in her Project Earth series is Keepers. And I described you as a futurist. How do you qualify to be a futurist? What are the credentials? What are your futurist credentials, Brenda?
Mine are medium strong. There's a lot of different kinds of futurist credentials. So there are people who are like the head futurist for Intel, and I probably would not get that job. But I've been studying with Glenn Heemstra, who's a local futurist, quite a bit. I've done speaking and working with futurist.com. I have talked to a number of people. Really, I think a lot of us are futurists. Most science fiction writers are at some level a futurist. I think you probably are too. You're people who are widely read, who are interested in the future, who talk about how to make it a better future and focus on that and are willing to talk about that in public venues like this, I think, are futurists at a very real level.
And you're chief information officer for the city of Kirkland. Does that and that affect your work? You were saying you see cities as being super important.
I do. First of all, I see local government a lot very firsthand. And at least in Kirkland, local government works, which is really pretty cool because I'm not certain our federal government is working on very many levels at all right now. And I think the local government can make a big difference. I think even in a megacity, you're still dealing with some level of locality that you're not dealing with on a federal level. People are still moving in the same physical places. And because I do technology for the city, I'm interested in and exposed to a lot of the thinking about how do you make cities smart in the future. So C. Coover, in this book series, a lot of things are automated, a lot of things are run with connected systems. There's a lot of knowledge and information. If somebody, you know, has a medical emergency on the side of the street, somebody is able to see that and come and quickly help them.
But are you being too hopeful, Brenda, that technology is not just going to get harnessed by the powerful and and used so people who have can keep what they have. I mean, that's the present that I see that I don't know how it doesn't get carried into your Seacouver of the future.
Well, I still have hackers, and I still have people who come in and would actually like to destroy the cities because they'd like to destroy the centers of power so that they can have the world that they wanted a little bit more. So I do still have nefarious bad guys who or bad people who are into doing the wrong things. And I have to imagine, when I think about our state of technology, think about the Facebook events, think of, for example, Facebook just found some things that they removed that they hadn't done or even been thinking about before the last election. Technology is very new. Social media is very new. And I think we and the people who are running these companies are all together learning about the dangers. And I have to imagine we'll be able to figure out how to take care of at least some of them. Undoubtedly not all of them. I mean, this isn't, you know, a perfect world. It isn't always happy. Everyone isn't fulfilled. In fact, in the opening of the first book, the two sisters' parents kill themselves because they don't have a way of feeling connected in this large city. They're basically depressed. You know, so essentially, it's not a perfect world. It does have its black and its dark spots. It has its difficult spots. But I do believe that one of science fiction's things to do, things that matter, is to help paint or show us a way that we might move forward into a positive future.
That's Brenda Cooper, science fiction writer, thinker about the future, author of 8 books. Her latest book is Keepers, second book in the Project Earth series. And when she's not writing, she's chief information officer for the city of Kirkland. Brenda, thanks for helping us.
Thank you.